I'm Dustin Mixon. I'm from the Program in Applied and Computational Mathematics at Princeton University. I'm Robert Colorbank's student. And today I'm going to be talking about some work I did this past summer with Chris Quinn, a grad student at Urbana-Champaign, and his advisor, Nagar Kivash, and also Matt Fickus at the Air Force Institute of Technology. So first, we'll talk about the problem at hand. Let's say I have a file that I want to share with a bunch of my friends, but I want to be able to determine if any of my friends decide to leak this file to other people. So let's say I notice one of the copies of the files in the wrong person's hands. I can look at that copy and notice if I had put a fingerprint, a distinct fingerprint on that, notice where the fingerprint came from, and identify my traitor. Now let's suppose that my friends are smarter, and a group of culprits, decide to collaborate and make a forgery with their copies. That's going to make it harder for me to identify who the traitors are. But let's say the way they forge it is they do a convex combination of their copies, and then they add some random noise on top of that. Well, my goal is to identify the culprits, and this talk is geared to answer this question of how you do that. So the first thing you might do is isolate the noisy combination of fingerprints. You take the forgery and you subtract off the host signal, and what's left is a convex combination of fingerprints plus some noise. If you view your fingerprints as columns of a short fat matrix, big F, multiply that by alpha, which has mostly zero entries. The non-zero entries are the alpha Ks, K being in your coalition script K. And you plus this this epsilon vector. When you pose it in this matrix vector format, you basically want to recover the support of alpha, the locations of the non-zero entries of alpha, given the measurements that you have, y minus s equaling this f alpha plus epsilon. So let's first look at the noiseless case where epsilon is zero. Then you have this pictorial figure of the matrix vector thing. The thing on the left is what we have available to us. It's the forgery minus the host signal. The short fat matrix, the columns are fingerprints, and then the sparse vector on the right there is alpha. The white entries are the zero entries, and the colored entries are the alpha Ks in our convex combination. So when we pose the problem this way, it's appropriate to consider compressed sensing as a solution alternative. What compressed sensing offers is machinery that will allow us to not only identify the support of alpha, but actually recover alpha with its the values of the non-zero entries. But this assumes sparsity in the support, that there's not too many colluders in the coalition. So if we assume that our coalition is small enough, we will be able to use compressed sensing ideas to find the perpetrators. So to go a little more in depth on the machinery offered by compressed sensing, let's talk about the restricted isometry property. This is a property on short fat matrices that says that the short fat matrix F acts as a near isometry on sufficiently sparse vectors. So if your vector X has no more than K non-zero entries, then the length of FX is somewhere between 1 minus delta and 1 plus delta times the length of X squared. And the importance of the restricted isometry property is reflected in this theorem by Candace and Tao, which states that if your matrix is RIP, then you can find any K sparse vector X by minimizing the one norm over all vectors that map to fx. Normally, you'd have to find the sparsest vector in the preimage. But because our short fat matrix satisfies RIP, we're able to view this problem as being equivalent to this L1 minimization, which we can solve by linear programming. So the moral of this slide is if your fingerprints are columns in an RIP matrix, then you can find alpha and identify the perpetrators in the noiseless case just using linear programming. But we didn't assume a noiseless case. We assumed noise. So let's talk about the noise. So the results on linear programming to perform this recovery problem, it's kind of limited. If epsilon is small, then you can perform linear programming, but it'll only work if epsilon is small. So let's start walking away from linear programming because we care about noise. Let's look at focus detection, where we care whether a particular user is in a coalition. So look at the set of all fingerprint combinations where the weights are equal and the coalition size is no more than k, and break that set up into a set in which M is a member of the coalition and M is not a member of the coalition. So this gives you the guilty set for M and the not guilty set for M. And we can talk about the distance between these two sets as being the minimum distance between points in one set and another set. And we can actually bound this distance from below, provided the fingerprints come from columns of an RIP matrix. And so this really illustrates that there is some resilience to noise with RIP fingerprints. That there's if provided the noise is half of this lower bound, you'll be able to determine whether a given user is guilty. So RIP appears to be great for fingerprint design. So how do we build an RIP matrix? The typical construction uses random entries. If all the entries are independently drawn Gaussian random variables, then the resulting matrix is RIP with high probability. But it's only with high probability. There is some probability that you'll fail, but you won't know it, because checking that a matrix satisfies RIP is NP-hard. So this leads us to look for deterministic constructions of RIP matrices. And the key tool in doing this is using what's called the Gerschkorn circle theorem, which states that, well, a diagonal matrix, the eigenvalues are the diagonal entries. Well, a nearly diagonal matrix, the diagonal entries will be close to the eigenvalues. How close? Well, that'll be determined by the size of the off-diagonal entries. So when trying to demonstrate that a matrix is RIP, you're really trying to say something about the eigenvalues of all the submatrices of the Gramian. So if you take your matrix of fingerprints, assume your fingerprints have unit norm, define the worst case coherence to be the size of the largest inner product between the fingerprints. And then for each K, we can analyze what the smallest delta is, for which F is K delta RIP. And the way you do that is you want to find out how far away from 1 the eigenvalues of each of the submatrices are. So you subtract the subgramians, the identity from the subgramians, which centers it about 0 as opposed to centering it about 1. And then the maximum distance will be the spectral norm of this difference. And using the Gerschkorn circle theorem, this will be bounded above by k minus 1 times mu. Why? Because there's k minus 1 off-diagonal entries in each row, and mu is the size of the largest off-diagonal entry. So I just demonstrated to you that F is k delta RIP whenever delta is bigger than k minus 1 times the worst case coherence. It would be nice if the worst case coherence were small, because that would give us the best RIP parameter for our utility. How small can the worst case coherence be? The Welsh bound tells us that the worst case coherence is bounded below by this square root. And there exist constructions which actually achieve this lower bound. Those are called equiangular tight frames. So for equiangular tight frames, mu is equal to this Welsh bound, this square root. And so using that equality and the inequality from the previous slide, we know that equiangular tight frames are actually k delta RIP when you satisfy this inequality, when delta squared is bigger than this quotient. Because equiangular tight frames happen to achieve the Welsh bound, and because the worst case coherence is what naturally comes out of the Gersh-Gorin argument to demonstrate RIP, equiangular tight frames happen to be the state of the art for deterministic RIP constructions. And it's relatively easy to build an equiangular tight frame. I wrote a paper recently with Matt Fickus called Steiner Equiangular Tight Frames. If you Google Steiner ETFs, they'll tell you how to construct these guys, but I'm not going to talk about that today. I just want to leave you with the fact that equiangular tight frames appear to be particularly well suited as fingerprinting codes, both because they're RIP and because they're deterministic, easy to build. So let's zoom in on this particular subclass of RIP matrices in the context of focus detection. So with focus detection, we take our noisy convex combination of fingerprints, and we compare it to all of the fingerprints in our dictionary. The fingerprints that look the most like our noisy combination, we say belong to guilty suspects. So this process incurs certain false positive and false negative probabilities. And the probability, the fact that there's a probability to talk about is because epsilon is modeled as Gaussian with variance sigma squared. So the false positive probability is the probability that we declare that he's guilty when he's actually not, and vice versa for false negative. What I'm going to talk about is the worst case of these types of probabilities. So the worst case false positive is for each coalition, you look at all guys not in your coalition and take the maximum false positive probability and maximize over all of the coalitions. But for the false negative, it's a different story, because we want to catch at least one colluder, namely the most vulnerable. So instead of maximizing over all members of a coalition, we actually minimize the false negative probabilities over all members of the coalition, and then maximize that over all coalitions. So with these, we actually have a result that says fingerprints that form an equiangular tight frame actually have these false positive and false negative probabilities satisfy these inequalities using the Q function. And I'd like to just go over these inequalities in more detail. The first one, an upper bound on the false positive, it's independent of the colluder's choice of alpha. So remember, alpha is the weights that they chose to use for their convex combination of fingerprints for the forgery. Regardless of what coefficients they use, they won't be able to frame an innocent user, since this upper bound is independent of alpha. So that's kind of a fun interpretation. And then the second inequality, we notice that the upper bound is maximized when the coefficients in the collusion are equal. So the way we interpret this is that the colluders, well, they don't want to get caught, and they have the best chance of not getting caught under focus detection if their weights are equal. And this comes out of the fact that focus detection is seeking to find the most vulnerable. So when the weights are equal, the most vulnerable is least vulnerable. So this talk was basically a presentation selling compressed sensing for fingerprint design. Compressed sensing ideas like the restricted isometry property appear to be useful in fingerprint design and in thinking of ways of identifying culprits. And equiangular tight frames being deterministic and RIP and easy to construct, they're well suited for fingerprints in designing them. Focus detection appears to work well, and I'd like to think more about different ways of detecting culprits using equiangular tight frame fingerprints. This concludes my talk, and I'll entertain your questions at this point.
We have time for questions.
In compressed sensing, you want to reconstruct the whole support, the alpha vector. Whereas here, indeed, you are interested in just catching one colluder. So there's a kind of mismatch between...
Right. So another thing that I could do is, instead of just catching the most vulnerable, I could catch the top K vulnerable. When I set up the focus detection, I set a threshold tau and decide that a user is guilty if the test statistic exceeds tau. I won't necessarily have only one guilty suspect with that process. But with the theorem statement that I gave, it was based on most vulnerable, the worst case scenario, if you can only get one. But agreed, compressed sensing is more versatile. It's intended to capture the entire support, recover the entire vector in its entirety. So there's definitely more work to be done to incorporate compressed sensing ideas and model selection ideas for the fingerprints problem.
Can I have?
Great.
I don't see the. I have difficulty seeing the difference with previous paper from the same author, like the one based on simplex code or expurgated simplex code, because the setup seems to be the same. The detector is also a linear correlation. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, Nagar published saying that simplex codes are optimal, provided the number of users is at most the signal dimension plus one. And the beauty of this solution is that we're allowed to have the number of users not be so constricted. It could be larger than n plus one. And that's what equiangular tight frames allows for. In fact, constructions exist for number of users scaling on the order of the square of the signal dimension. So that's much more versatility than what the simplex codes give. And to be more specific, simplex codes happen to be a special case of equiangular tight frames. So I'm glad you mentioned that. It really kind of puts this work into proper context.
Other questions? No? So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.